Special funding for the podcast of On Point is provided by Boston University School of Law, dedicated to excellence in teaching and to preparing our graduates to hit the ground running.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Elon Musk is a dreamer and a doer. He made millions young with internet startups Zip2 and PayPal. His SpaceX company resupplies the space station and has aimed to colonize Mars. Back on Earth at 38, he's chairman, CEO, and product architect at Silicon Valley-based Tesla Motors. Tesla makes electric cars, sexy, fast, expensive electric cars. Now it's aiming for a bigger market, aiming to change the auto industry and maybe save the world. Could this work? This hour, On Point, Tesla Motors CEO Elon Musk is with us. Joining me now from Los Angeles is Elon Musk, CEO of Tesla Motors, the electric car company. Tesla has started at the market's high end with its sporty $100,000-plus Roadster. Version 2.0 is just out. Now, backed by almost half a billion dollars in government loans, Tesla is gearing up to build a $50,000 five-seat sedan for 2011. They've got big fans, big skeptics, big dreams. Elon Musk heads it all. Elon Musk, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
What's your vision?
Well, you know, one thing I think it's very important to emphasize is that the goal of Tesla has always been to produce mass market electric cars and to serve as a catalyst for the transition to electric transportation for the whole industry. Mm. So people often misinterpret our initial product being the Tesla Roadster, you know, being a $100,000 sports car as though we somehow thought there was a shortage of sports cars for rich people. And in fact, really, it was the only real option for us as a car startup. And that's really for two reasons. In order to make something, some new technology cost effective, you've got to achieve economies of scale, which means you've got to have a, you know, when you're building a physical product, it means you've got to have a really giant factory to achieve that mass production volume. And secondly, you also need to have optimized the technology. Even if we had those scale economies, it would still be really quite expensive.
And you didn't start out as GM or Toyota or Nissan. You didn't have a big infrastructure. You started out in Silicon Valley with more or less the idea first, not the factory.
Right. Electric cars have been something that I've been interested in for a long time, almost 20 years. In fact, I'd say right on 20 years, back when I was about 18 or so, and just starting out in college. It always seemed to me that electric cars were the right form of transportation from a physics standpoint. They're just so much more efficient than internal combustion engines. And something, you know, because they run on electricity and you can produce that electricity in a variety of renewable ways, it seemed long term, if we were to achieve a sustainable energy economy, we would have to have something like electric cars combined with solar power, wind power, geothermal, potentially long-term nuclear fusion. So this is a long-standing interest of mine. In fact, the original reason I went out to Silicon Valley was not to start an internet company, but actually to do graduate studies at Stanford on high energy density capacitors for use as an energy storage mechanism in electric cars.
You did jump ahead and figure out how to put a lithium battery in your electric car when the big automakers still weren't doing that, and kudos to you. I mean, you've got them sitting in the garages, you know, famously, of Clooney and Damon and DiCaprio and David Letterman and the founders of Google. But the next step is, what do you call it, your Model S. Now, here you're going from $100,000 or $120,000 down to $40,000, $50,000. Are you going to be competing nose-to-nose with the Chevy Volt? Do you have the infrastructure to do that?
Well, We're actually doing a couple of things. So we're going from $100,000 sports car, which is quite cost competitive with other sports cars of that genre. It's comparable in cost to a Porsche 911, and it's faster. And actually, what's also worth noting is it's more efficient, more than twice as efficient as a Prius. But then going to the Model S, That's a case where production volume is going up by a factor of 20. Price is going in half. But actually, what you're getting for that price is probably doubling. So I would say it's probably a fourfold increase in value. And that's about as that's a pretty big leap for a small company to go 20 times larger in volume. It's about as big a leap as we think we could possibly make. And then our third generation would be the sub $30,000 car, but that's about 5 years out, and that would be produced at maybe 200,000 units a year.
It's promising enough that you got the government's attention big time. They've been handing out a lot of money, a program I think that emerged under George Bush, now being executed under Obama, for higher efficiency cars. Money's gone to Detroit. Money's gone to Nissan. Money's gone to you, and I've got tape of that announcement. This is in June, Elon Musk. This is announcing the first $8 billion in clean car funding, part of a $25 billion pool of loan money altogether. Now, here is Stephen Chu, the energy secretary, announcing your share of that pie in Dearborn, Michigan, at Ford's Research Center, talking about your company, California-based Tesla.
Tesla Motors, an entrepreneurial startup company, will receive $465 million in loans to help produce an electric vehicle that is $50,000 cheaper than its first model, with a fuel efficiency equivalent of more than 250 miles per gallon. Tesla will also manufacture drivetrains to power the electric vehicles of Daimler and other car makers in addition to their own.
Stephen Chu, U.S. Secretary of Energy, talking about $465 million in low-cost loans going to Tesla as part of a clean car funding by the federal government. What's the case that you made to Washington, Elon Musk, to bring that money into your coffers?
Well, first of all, I'd say it was not an easy process. I mean, we've been working with the Department of Energy now for 2 years. And they've gone through our cost projections, our capital projections exhaustively with third-party experts, and so this was not something that they entered into in any kind of a cavalier manner.
Good.
And in fact, one of the requirements they had was that the company be able to demonstrate viability, which is why Tesla, Nissan, and Ford got it, but GM and Chrysler did not. Not yet, anyway. I'm sure they will in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So it's how cool. Secretary Chu also mentioned the fact that we're providing powertrains to other manufacturers, and that's absolutely the case. One of the ways that we can make cars more affordable faster is by working with other manufacturers. So the most notable example right now is the fact that we're working with Daimler on an electric smart car. So we're producing the battery pack and charge for an electric smart car, and that's the kind of car that pretty much anyone could afford. And the first of the fleet of 1,000 cars go on the road, I think, around the end of this year, initially in Europe, and then sometime next year they'll be coming to the U.S. So that's something we're really excited about. That the smart car was always intended to be an electric car back when it was started by the founder of Swatch. But they could never get the battery pack right. And now with Tesla and Daimler working together, we're able to make the whole thing pretty compelling, I think. It's a pretty nice little car.
But how do you bounce the whole operation up? I mean, it is absolutely alluring. I'm looking at car reviewers here. They drive the Roadster. They rave on about how owners of Porsches and Ferraris will enjoy this. You said recently, though, I mean, you've got, I don't know, 500 or 600 that you've actually put out so far. You've said in a decade you could be selling 1 million cars a year. That's more than GM will make in the United States this year. How do you make that leap?
Well, so we just recently delivered our 700th car at the Frankfurt Auto Show, and we'll be delivering, in the coming months, our 1,000th car. I mean, these are obviously small numbers in comparison to the greater industry. But as you start to progress in terms of orders of magnitude, you get to 1 million cars pretty quickly. And I think it's sort of a bit unfair to compare the 1 million car number to more than GM, because we're not seeing GM's best days right now.
Nevertheless, it's GM.
Well, it's not the GM it used to be. Neither are you, though.
I mean, you've never been that GM. You're in Silicon Valley. What, you're going to be building factories in Silicon Valley? Are you going to be building cars in California?
We currently actually manufacture the Roadster in California. That's another sort of misperception out there that the car is made in Europe. Actually, we the point of manufacture for the Tesla Roadster is currently in Silicon Valley.
But I mean, when you get up to this million car scale, if indeed you get there, where do you see those factories sitting?
Well, that'll certainly be a case of multiple factories. You know, so if you sort of take the progression that I described earlier, which is, you know, we're expecting to be in production with the sedan at 20,000 units a year, that's going from 1,000 units a year with Roadster to 20,000 units a year with the sedan in about 2.5 years. Roughly 2 to 3 years after that is when we would have our third generation platform running, and that's on the order of 200,000 units a year. And then, you know, so if you so that we're talking about, you know, something on the order of 5 years from now. And so if you add another 5 years on that, can we go from 200,000 cars to a million? I think that's, you know, that's pretty doable. I'm not saying we will do that, but aspirationally, we'll certainly try to do that.
Does Detroit have anything to do with your plans geographically, or are you West Coast based? Do you expect to be all over?
No, I'd certainly expect that if we were to reach a million car volume, we would certainly have factories in multiple locations.
Perspective on the big dream he's got going and how it's going. With us right now from Detroit is Bill Vlasic, Detroit bureau chief for the New York Times. Hi, Bill. Thanks for joining us.
Hello, Tom. Very good. Glad to be here.
We've got Elon Musk with us on the line from Los Angeles. What do you make of this upstart, and what does Detroit make of it, Bill?
Well, there's a tremendous amount of activity in Detroit on electric cars right now, and all over the country and all over the world. The electric car is probably the single biggest changing factor in the industry, and I think there's been a lot of work done in a lot of places. I'm familiar with Tesla. They're certainly in the mix with all the others, and we're going to see a lot of news on the electric car front in the months to come.
But is Detroit thinking, as Elon Musk clearly is, and Washington with its investment is, that out of Silicon Valley we may have a real new player here? And I've seen Bob Lutz, who of course is with GM, champion of the Chevy Volt, very complimentary of Tesla for coming up with its lithium battery system. On the other hand, talking about the hubris of Tesla, you know, that, hey, we're so nimble and innovative, we're not like Detroit. He says when they grow up, they will be like Detroit.
Well, I would take everything Bob Lutz says with a grain of salt at this point, because General Motors, having gone through bankruptcy, is reinventing itself as a company, and their future is very, very tied up in how well they do in the electric car market, among other things. It's clear that the Obama administration is placing its bets all over the map on electric cars and batteries, and certainly in the support that it's given, you know, General Motors and Chrysler. This is a policy decision, and it's been well covered and pretty well documented that Mr. Obama would like to see a million electric cars on the road in the not-too-distant future, and all the automakers are receiving government assistance in that regard, including Ford Motor Company, which did not get a so-called bailout or have to go through bankruptcy. So the capital, most of it, is coming from Washington, D.C., in my opinion, except if you're talking about Renault and Nissan and some of the foreign automakers who are working very hard in this regard as well.
But when it comes to Tesla, you're sitting in Detroit. Looking out to Menlo Park, do you see a curiosity or a real competitor potentially in the making? What do you think will determine that, Bill?
You know, I cover the industry. I don't cover the technology. I'm very familiar with the electric car business that's going on right now. I think many successes in the auto industry have always come from early adopters and people who are out front, whether it's a company or, in fact, even a division within a company. So there's no reason that Silicon Valley can't be competitive in terms of bringing capital and intelligence and business plans to this. In the end, I think I personally having covered all the companies and seen what their research shows them, that the electric car will have an enormous following in this country and around the world, and it all depends on reliability. If people believe these cars are good, they'll buy sports cars, they'll buy pickup trucks, they'll buy anything, but they have to be proven, reliable, which is going to take some time.
Bill Vlasic, Detroit Bureau Chief of the New York Times, joining us from Detroit. Thank you for being with us, Bill.
Sure.
Elon Musk, how will you compete with the Chevy Volt? How will it compete with you, Tesla?
Well, I think, first of all, it's important to sort of reemphasize that the whole reason that I personally have put so much time and effort into helping create Tesla is to serve as a catalyst for the electric car revolution. In other words, I view other companies coming out with electric cars as absolutely a good thing and not at all an unexpected thing, which sometimes people will assume. So I'm glad to see things like the Volt. I'm glad to see things like the Nissan Leaf and any other efforts in the direction of sustainable transportation. I'm just talking for me personally here, but you know, the reason I'm doing this is not because I thought a car company was the best risk-adjusted return way to invest money. I think this is a pretty hard way to make money with a car company. There are a few harder ways, actually.
But you're in it to do business, not just to perhaps do good. I mean, if you're talking about going to a million cars a year, you will be head-to-head with the big automakers. And it's fascinating to get inside the head of a businessman like you about how you do that. How do you compete with their infrastructure, resources, history? What are your advantages? What are theirs? How do you see that competition?
Well, it's interesting. You know, I don't really think of myself as a businessman, but really just sort of an engineer solving problems. There's no question Tesla has to be profitable. And in fact, Tesla hit profitability in July of this year, which was a pretty tough, a pretty tall order in this economy. I certainly recognize that a company has to be profitable to be, or it will soon go out of business.
A lot of venture capital firms are pouring money into Tesla. They're not doing that for their health.
No, they're not, and it's. I mean, they have some faith in me and the Tesla team that we'll build a valuable company, and I think we will at the end of the day. It's just, you know, if making money was the only goal, I think we'd pick some easier problem.
Fair enough, but now you're in it. How do you, or what are your advantages or disadvantages in competing with the big guys?
Well, I think I'm a very product-focused person. I think great companies are built from great products. If we're really dedicated to always making sure we have phenomenal products, that the market will respond and we'll do well in the competitive race. I'm less oriented towards marketing fancy footwork or sort of clever financial structures and that sort of thing. I'm very, very oriented towards just making sure we have phenomenal products. And I really think that the Model S is going to be a phenomenal product. I think people will be pretty amazed at what comes out of our factory in a couple of years.
We're going to push you more on that competition because it's just interesting to see what Detroit's up against, what you're up against. But let's get a call from across the way from Detroit. Toronto, Chris, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Just got a question about the general route of going with a complete electrical vehicle. I was wondering just technically why somebody wouldn't put in a small gasoline engine, say like a scooter engine to run a generator, that the gasoline engine may get 60 miles to the gallon instead of an average of 28, because I know an awful lot of people that would rather get 60 than 28.
Mm-hmm.
I'd go for a half step instead of going for 100%.
So why pure electric? Elon Musk?
Well, there's a famous quote by Gretzky: "You want to skate to where the puck's going to be." And I think there's a role for plug-in hybrids and hybrids, obviously. Just as there was a role for amphibians going when animal life went from oceans to land. But really, it tends to optimize to one or the other. And and if you look at say our Model S, which is a pretty big leap forward from the Roadster. The Model S will have a range of up to 300 miles. You'll be able to switch out the battery pack in less than 5 minutes.
There's 300 miles between recharging, or I should say batteries pack switchings?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. The battery pack, the car will be able to run 300 miles before being recharged or pack swapped. The pack can be swapped in under 5 minutes, and the charge time is only 45 minutes. And if you think, let's say you're traveling across country, you know, if you drive 300 miles, you probably need to stop for a meal and a bathroom break. Mm-hmm. So you can do that, have your car be plugged in the parking lot, you come back from your meal, and you're ready to go. So Or if you're really in a hurry, you swap out your battery pack at a pack swap station, and there are some companies that have business models that are oriented towards that.
But why skip the little gas motor? Our question from Toronto comes. Why the purist, the pure electric?
Well, that's essentially what I'm answering, which is mm-hmm. that, you know, if you have all those, if that's just our second generation, what will our third generation be? If our second generation has gone that far, 300-mile range, 45-minute charge time, and 5-minute pack swap, why do you need a
– Who needs gas?
Who needs gas, particularly when you get to our third generation?
Let's go to Todd in Hartford, Connecticut. Todd, you're on the air with Elon Musk of Tesla.
Thank you. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Tom, Tesla and Motors in general here. We have to remember 100 years ago we had biofuel – Model T, Ford, and electric cars. And now we're trying to catch up. And I think the quickest, most effective way is electric wheel, just a wheel, motor and a wheel. I put one on my mountain bike just a few months ago.
I'm not following, Todd. Are you saying you do you want to see electric cars or just
electric wheels?
Electric motorcycle, a single wheel, forget
wheel.
The car?
Yeah, just a wheel, because you could put the – like most cars are front-wheel drive, and the rear wheels just kind of sit there. And they can become electric wheels. And, you know, congratulations. And using the capacitors is very important because it can quickly, quickly charge up. So you can use that rear wheel as a brake and as a motor.
Elon, you may follow this better than I do, Elon Musk. Do you see the distinction that Todd's making?
There's a lot of people sort of think, okay, well, let's put electric motors in the wheel. I think that could sort of be an interesting sort of neat little solution for a bicycle. It doesn't work too well for cars because you tend to have high unsprung mass in the wheel hubs. And you have to say, okay, well, how much does that increase your range? You know, if you go from having an electric motor with a RPM reducer or a differential down to, and connecting to the half shafts, pardon me for sort of being slightly technical, and you compare that solution to putting two motors in the hubs themselves, is your car better? Have you increased the range? And actually, you really will find that you've made almost no difference to the range, but your car does not handle nearly as well because you have too much weight in the wheel hubs.
Todd, thanks for calling. Norfolk, Virginia. Chris, you're on the air with Elon Musk of Tesla.
Thank you, Tom, for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering what other types of technology would be integrated into this this new car. I work in an industry where we deal with a lot of grease-packed bearings, and I've been doing research into bearings that are supported by a liquid magnet, basically. And I was just wondering if that would also be put into vehicles to eliminate greasing and potential part failure.
Let us look at it, Chris. Elon, beyond your lithium battery, a breakthrough on its own, what else are you bringing to the table here?
Well, the listeners, I think, hit on a good point there, which is, that there's really a lot of ways in which energy is sucked out of the system. So you can think of the battery pack as kind of, that's kind of like your, that's kind of like your revenue or your asset, and you've got these costs or liabilities which suck energy out of the system, and that's a wide range of things from the rolling resistance of the tires, the bearing, the bearing efficiency in the wheels, the efficiency of the transmission, the motor, the power electronics, the drag coefficient of the car. All these things combine to sort of absorb energy, and it's not enough just to have a high energy density battery pack. You actually have to have a very efficient car overall and look at the thing as a system and optimize it all. And that's really something that we've done with the Roadster, and we're taking to a whole new level with the Model S. You have to make a car very light, aerodynamically efficient. I mean, all these things matter quite a bit. And these things that consume energy tend to act like compound interest. So you might say only lose 2% efficiency here, 3% there, 4% there, but it all multiplies out and ends up being a big number if you're not careful.
And, of course, it all counts when you're trying to keep that range down and the mileage up. Grant, in Arlington, Massachusetts, you're on the air with Elon Musk.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for the call. Just a quick question. You mentioned infrastructure and having to grow over time. I mean, we're essentially replacing fuel with fuel from gas with energy from the grid. How many electric vehicles could you drop into a metropolitan area into the Northeast before it really would start to overwhelm, you know, overwhelm our basic power infrastructure over the next 5-10 years?
In the Northeast or any other region, I guess it's a good question. Elon Musk?
Well, we really don't have to worry too much about this in the next, I'd say, 20 years because most car charging, the vast majority of it occurs when cars are stationary, and they tend to be stationary at night at home, and that's when the power grid has massive overcapacity. So the power grid is actually sized to assume the worst peak loading on the worst possible summer day, and you've got a power plant or two down. So for most of the time, particularly at night, you may be as low as 10 or 20% capacity in terms of what people are using. So you have all this unused capacity that can be used by electric cars for recharging. And so it's really not an issue until cars become really at least probably half the cars on the road are electric, and maybe even more than that.
But I think Grant's not asking just about capacity, but about the energy required, you know, to generate the electricity for those cars. I mean, is it going to be, I don't know, a whole new loads of coal and tar sands roaring into the system to support your nice, clean electric car at the other end? What about the back end of it?
Well, I think we need to be very, very cognizant of sustainable power generation, and that's why, you know, I have another company called Solar City, which is focused on providing affordable solar power, and doing quite well actually. So with a combination of sustainable power generation and then electric cars, then you have a solution that could work for forever in theory. We do need to be cognizant. I mean, that's something, you know, sustainable power generation is something we need to do to deal with independent of electric cars, whether they're successful or not. We don't want to be using coal and gas-fired plants if we can avoid it, and I think we can. So,
do you see the technology rollouts lining up in time so that by the time we've got a lot more electric cars, if that's where we go, we've also got sufficient alternative energy out there to charge them without, you know, bringing down a new haze of coal dust?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, the Obama administration is spending more effort and energy on energy generation than they are on the car side of things. That there have been some pretty huge low interest loans given out for solar power generation, but they've tended to get a lot less press than the stuff about cars. I think cars just have a much more, since they're a consumer product, it's something that the general public pays a lot more attention to than you know what's going on in the power plant business. But people should be aware that there's a huge amount of activity, particularly in solar power, but also in wind and geothermal.
And you think in terms of when these things are all ready to go, that they may line up? I mean, if you had a decade gap between new energy sources and new electric cars, you could burn a lot of coal in that 10 years.
No, absolutely. In fact, but I think I'm actually it's looking really good in my opinion as far as sustainable power generation, and that's, like I said, that's why I put, you know, some funding and effort into Solar City to help accelerate that.
I'm Tom Asbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with CEO of Tesla Motors, Elon Musk, about the future of the electric car. They make $100,000 plus Roadster right now. 2011, you'll see something about half that on the road with a big range. And it's right at the heart of big dreams that Tesla has about transforming the U.S. auto market, about transforming U.S. energy consumption through the way we drive. You can join the conversation this hour. What do you make of the Tesla vision, the Tesla chances? $465 million, their piece of U.S. federal money being awarded to auto companies to have more fuel-efficient cars. Here's Stephen Chu again. This was at Ford's Dearborn, Michigan Research Center in June, announcing some of those loans, $5.9 billion for Ford, $1.6 billion for Nissan North America, and there Tesla Motors of Menlo Park, California, $465 million in loans. To get it going, here's Secretary Chu.
Transforming the American auto industry will not be easy, but we know it can be done. During World War II, Detroit transformed itself at a breathtaking pace to meet the wartime production needs and become the arsenal of democracy. Today, we need a similar effort to win the battle against climate change and to jumpstart our economy. We know our workers have the skills, we know our engineers have the ingenuity, and we see today that the automobile industry itself has the will and ability to innovate change.
Energy Secretary Stephen Chu announcing those big loans in June. By the way, you can see a photo gallery of Tesla cars, some video of Teslas at our website, onpointradio.com. CEO Elon Musk is with us, and Bill's calling from Bowling Green, Kentucky, with a question. Bill, you're on the air with Elon Musk.
Yes, hello, Tom, and congratulations, Mr. Musk. I wonder why it's taking so long for the United States government to get involved as we creep along into these industries. The German government and the Chinese governments are all pouring massive, massive amounts in and making it profitable for the consumer to purchase these pieces I don't see anybody that doesn't understand what's coming. And as far as the grid, that's going to handle itself depending upon the needs. But the needs are going to be more renewable, so they're not going to be such an issue. But the resistance of our government is just horrid. It took you this long to get a major award or something, you know?
Well, of course, they haven't been around very long, but what about the United States and this whole project of electric cars? How do you judge the history, Elon?
Well, I think it's not bad. It's certainly true that the German government, Japanese, and the Chinese are really pouring tremendous amount of resources into the electric car arena. I think the German Chancellor just announced that they want to see a million electric cars on the road pretty soon. I think in the next decade in Germany. So there's certainly quite a bit of competition among governments. But I would give some credit, particularly to the Obama administration, for moving quickly. I mean, they haven't really been in power all that long, but they've managed to really accelerate a lot of these programs. I give credit to the Senate, actually, the energy folks in the Senate have and in the House have really done a lot of good as far as creating incentives for electric cars. So I think we're definitely moving in the right direction. I think Secretary Chu is making the right moves, and the White House is making the right moves. So I would actually give pretty good grades to the U.S. government, particularly the current administration, which recognizes the gravity of the problem. They're going to have to do some tough things in the future. There's this question of what to do about carbon. Do you do a cap and trade or carbon tax? I personally think that there's some wisdom to having a carbon tax, but that's going to be a tough thing to do. So,
let's get a call from Doug in Proctorsville, Vermont. Doug, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I'm wondering who builds the electric car now, and who will build it in the future. What kind of skills are needed to become a part of this company?
Great question, Elon Musk. How do you put them together now? What about in the future?
Sure. Well, right now the Roadster is. There's a lot of hand-built elements in the Roadster, and it's sort of hand-assembled because the production volume is quite low, only 1,000 a year. As we move to the Model S, there's a little more automation, but still a lot of people involved. We're expecting that the Model S factory, which is likely to be located in Southern California, will probably be employing, as it reaches its peak production, somewhere in the order of 1,200 people directly. And then, of course, there'll be suppliers all around the country that are providing parts for the car and, probably generating, I don't know, three or four times that number of jobs. So maybe there's, in terms of direct and indirect jobs, maybe something like 4,000 or 5,000. And it's going to be a wide range of skills from metal stamping to assembly, programming of the production line. A lot of the skills are very similar to what's already in the existing car business, but with, perhaps with a little more of a focus towards the electrical engineering side and the electrical technician side.
Do you expect to do your sourcing more or less like Detroit does its sourcing? I mean, you've worked with Lotus. using its leased chassis for the car so far? Are you going to be pulling in components from all over the world in more or less the same way that Detroit has come to do?
I actually am a little more of a proponent for domestic sourcing and for a little more in the direction of vertical integration. So I think I'd probably be slightly contrarian in that direction, as we're gonna be probably more vertically integrated than is typically the case. I think there's efficiencies to be gained by being vertically integrated. I could be wrong about that, of course, but that's my opinion there. And actually, before I forget, if I may change the subject just briefly, it's worth noting that anyone who buys the Tesla Roadster, if they buy our car, they're effectively helping pay for the mass production cars that are to come in the future, because we plow all of our profit back into R&D and into scaling up the business. So when somebody buys a Tesla Roadster, they're really helping pay for those future mass market cars, which is not the case if somebody were to buy, say, a Porsche or a Ferrari. That will obviously just beget more Porsches or Ferraris.
Is that what you told George Clooney and, I don't know, Matt Damon to put a Roadster in their garage? You're paying for the future.
Yeah, I try to make that point whenever somebody buys our car. And I think it does matter to people. They're doing some good. They're doing good over and above the fact that they're not polluting individually themselves. They're helping pay for a better future, at least in a small way.
John in Boston, you're on the air with Tesla CEO.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
I was wondering if the new sedan that Tesla Motors is going to be coming out with will be based on an existing vehicle design, like the Roadster is based on the Lotus Elise, or will it be a clean sheet design with no similarity to any existing vehicles?
You can actually see, I think, some at least an image through our website. It looks sort of like a chubby Jaguar to me, Elon Musk. But I should let you speak for the
chubby
design yourself. Well, sleek.
Bite your tongue, sir.
I don't mean fat. But what about John's? Where did you get the design for the new Model S? And you've got pretty sporty design inclinations. Is that going to be a constant feature for Tesla?
Well, so first of all, I should clarify a misunderstanding with respect to the Roadster, which is we did start out with the idea of using the Lotus Elise chassis, but ultimately we could not, because our car ended up being 35% heavier. And we didn't have enough volume to pack the battery pack. Weight distribution was all different. The load points were all different. So in effect, we had to make extensive changes to the Elise chassis. And there's not a single body panel in common between our car and any other car. It's an all-new body. It's an all-carbon fiber body, actually. Mm-hmm. In fact, there are only 7% parts in common between the Elise and the Tesla Roadster. So I would liken it to, You find a property that looks, or a house that looks sort of like what you might want, but then you end up changing almost everything except one wall in the basement. And in retrospect, I think if I were to do it over, I think we would go with a clean sheet design for the Roadster, and it would have cost us less and gotten us to market sooner with ultimately a better suited vehicle for electric. And so with the Model S, that's the approach we're taking. The Model S is a clean sheet designed from the ground up to be a fantastic electric car. I think it stands to reason that if that's the approach you take, you're going to end up with a far better car than if you try to adapt something that was designed for a gasoline powertrain.
L.A. Times car critic Dan Neal drove it and called it, this is an early sort of a version, called a glorified golf cart. Does it hurt when you hear your baby called a golf cart?
Well, I guess it emphasized glorified.
that's the positive. That's the glass half full.
I don't know too many golf carts that even as a prototype could do 0 to 60 in 6.5 seconds and achieve 110 mile an hour top speed.
True enough.
Yeah, I think Neil was unfair and frankly inaccurate and said a bunch of things which were flat out false, and unfortunately in that article, I'm sorry to say.
You're a space guy. You want to colonize Mars. I mean, you come out of Zip2 and PayPal. Is it, what threads these together? What's the connection between an electric car and putting rockets into space, trying to put Scotty from Star Trek's ashes into space, or colonizing Mars? What's the thread that ties it together, Elon Musk?
Well, I've always wanted to be involved in things that I thought would have a positive effect on the future of humanity. And the three areas in college that seem to be, to me, would have the most positive effect on the future of humanity were, the internet, transitioning to a sustainable energy economy, and the third was space exploration, in particular the extension of life beyond Earth. You know, to sort of try to make true the stuff we see in science fiction. I just think it's a much more exciting and inspiring future if we're out there exploring the stars than if we're stuck on Earth forever. And I think, you know, there's also some defensive reasons there, which is we know that in the fossil record, even in the last, several hundred million years, there have been a number of extinction events of natural origin, anything from giant meteorites to super volcanoes and super ice ages, super hot ages. And then, of course, there are all the things that, you know, humanity might accidentally do to end its existence. Technology is, of course, a double-edged sword. And, so I think there's some defensive reasons to make sure that life as we know it is on multiple planets.
So Mars colonization is your backup plan if a meteor hits or global warming hits big?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of reasons for it. I think that's one of the reasons is to make sure we've life is on multiple planets. As far as we know, life only exists on Earth. I mean, I hope it exists elsewhere, but as far as we know, it's only here. And I think we almost have a duty, or humanity has a duty as life's agent, to extend life beyond Earth and make sure it doesn't get extinguished by some natural or perhaps man-made event. What may be a little counterintuitive is that I actually think that life on Earth will be great. I'm actually quite optimistic about Earth. I think things will most likely be really good for a really long time. And it's not because I think we're in imminent danger of demise that we should establish life on Mars, but rather that there is a small chance that there might be a calamity. But even a small chance it's important to protect against. It's like buying an insurance policy. You know, you don't expect to get killed in your car tomorrow, or get seriously injured, but you buy the insurance policy just in case. And I think that's how I would characterize it. It seems wise to me to spend a small amount of our resources, substantially less than 1% of our economy, on ensuring that life will continue if something terrible happens on Earth. But that's the defensive reason. Like I said, for me personally, it's actually more about having an exciting and inspiring future where we're exploring the stars. That personally gets me more motivated than the defensive reasons.
Let me get one more call, if I may, Elon. Les in Fort Myers, Florida. You're on with Elon Musk of Tesla Motors.
Hey, Tom. Good to be on.
Good to have you.
We are very much looking forward to owning two electric vehicles in our family, but as working people, we cannot really afford, obviously couldn't afford our Roadster. Even a car at $50,000 would be a lot for us, would be way more than we spend now. We're really interested in what you foresee as far as the future pricing of your cars.
Good question, Les. Thank you very much for it. Elon Musk?
Well, first of all, I can say to your listener, the absolute goal of Tesla from the beginning has been to provide a car that you can afford. That has been, we're getting there. There is no effort sped to try to get there as soon as humanly possible. It's actually all I care about, as far as electric cars are concerned. I think that the sports car is cool, but really, we want the mass market car. That's what we want to get to as soon as we possibly can. We're trying to grow as fast as we can to do that. I feel pretty confident we can get to a sub 30, a compelling sub $30,000 car in 5 years, One thing I should also point out is that although the sedan will be $50,000, because the cost of electricity is so much less than the cost of gasoline, and you'll be able to lease our car or finance our car, buying our Model S will be equivalent to buying maybe about a $35,000 gasoline car when you take into account the lease payments of the gasoline car versus the electric car and the cost of electricity versus gasoline. So it's more affordable than it first seems. But even so, we're working as hard as possible to get to that third-generation car. And then, of course, by working with Daimler on the electric Smart, that'll be a car that, well, I can't speak for Daimler. I have to be cautious about what I say there. But certainly the electric Smart will be very affordable. And then I should say we have a potential secret project that could advance that schedule. But I can't talk about that because we don't know if it'll transpire.
Fair enough. A little German involvement there. You were born in Pretoria. We hear a little South Africa still in your voice. We've just got half a minute here, Elon Musk. But do you see the United States as being eventually an important manufacturing center, originating center for electric vehicles? Are we in the
absolutely.
Game?
Absolutely. I think the United States will be probably either the first or second largest manufacturer of electric cars. The only competitor, realistically, I think, is China.
That would be a great thing. We'll be watching how you do in that game. It's been fascinating to have this time with you today. Elon Musk, CEO of Tesla Motors, joining us from Los Angeles. Thanks very much for your time. Good luck to you.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. Always great to have you. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.